This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Aaron Eckhart, stars in the new satirical film Thank You for Smoking, based on the novel by Christopher Buckley. Eckhart is best known for his role in Erin Brockovich as Brockovich's boyfriend, and for the four movies that he made with screenwriter and director Neil LaBute, In the Company of Men, Your Friends and Neighbors, Nurse Betty, and Possession. In the Company of Men put Eckhart on the map. He played an office worker who was dumped by a woman and becomes angry with all women. He cooks up a scheme to get even by setting up a woman and dumping her. In this scene in a bar, he proposes his plan to a friend who was also dumped by a woman. He says, "I know we're busy, but say we find some gal.
For the sake of argument, let's say we stumble on somebody, okay? And this person's just vulnerable as hell. You know, young thing, wallflower type or whatever. We're like disfigured in some way, I don't know. But just some woman who is pretty sure that life, and I mean a full, healthy sexual life, romance, stuff like that, is just lost to her forever. Okay? Anyhow, we take a girl of that type, and we both hit her. You know, small talk, a dinner date, flowers. No pushing it, not all on her blouse the first night out, but it's like taking her out to, see an ice show. Something like that. And we just do it, you know, you and me, up in the ante all the time. And suddenly she's got two men, she's calling her mom, she's wearing makeup again. And on we play, and on. And then one day, out goes a rug, and us pulling it hard. And Jill, she just comes tumbling after.
Aaron Eckhart has gone on to play several other characters who use their verbal gifts for devious or manipulative ends, perhaps none as funny as his character in his new film, Thank You for Smoking. He plays Nick Naylor, America's top tobacco lobbyist, who has been nicknamed the Sultan of Spin. In this scene, he's a guest on Joan London's TV show, along with several smoking opponents and a boy named Robin who has been battling lung cancer. One of the panelists accuses the tobacco industry of trying to kill this boy. Here's Nick's response.
How on earth would Big Tobacco profit off of the loss of this young man? Now, I hate to think in such callous terms, but if anything, we'd be losing a customer. It's not only our hope, it's in our best interest to keep Robin alive and smoking.
That's ludicrous.
Let me tell you something, Joan, and please, let me share something with the fine, concerned people in the audience today. The Ron Goodies of this world want the Robin Willigers to die.
What?
You know why? So that their budgets will go up. This is nothing less than trafficking in human misery. And you, sir, ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I ought to be ashamed of myself.
As a matter of fact, we're about to launch a $50 million campaign aimed at persuading kids not to smoke. Because I think that we can all agree that there is nothing more important than America's children.
That's a scene from Thank You for Smoking. Aaron Eckhart, welcome to Fresh Air. The tobacco lobbyist that you play comes up with some really incredible ways of spinning the health hazards of smoking. Do you have a favorite besides the one that we just heard?
I think my ultimate favorite is in the classroom when I, on a parent-teacher, where the fathers come in to tell the kids what they do for a living. There's firemen, kids bring in their dads who are doctors, and I come in as a tobacco lobbyist and tell the class that basically to keep an open mind about cigarettes. I really enjoy that scene because it really shows my character and everything he does and how much fun he has selling cigarettes.
Do you smoke and Thank You for Smoking? Nobody does. You're supposed to be a smoker in it, but
yes.
I don't think we see you smoking.
No. I think John Wayne, there's a clip of him in the film, and he almost gets a cigarette to his lips, and then he's shot dead. That was another thing that Jason was conscious of. He, A, didn't want to be a proponent of cigarettes or an advocate, and he wanted people to come away from the movie thinking, well, although this takes place in the milieu of Washington, D.C. and around tobacco, it's not a film about tobacco. It's a film about a man who loves to talk.
You've made four films that were written and directed by Neil LaBute, In the Company of Men, Your Friends and Neighbors, Nurse Betty, and Possession. Now, the first two films I mentioned are two of the most like misogynistic films, and I should say, misanthropic films. It's not just women who are these characters hate. You know, the most misanthropic films I've seen. So is there anything in the characters that you recognize? Let's start with In the Company of Men. I mean, this is a guy, your character. He and his friend have been basically jilted by girlfriends. So in retribution, his plan is to find a young woman who is very vulnerable and who probably wants but hasn't really had romance in her life, who maybe has some kind of disfigurement that makes her really insecure and more vulnerable, and pretend he wants both of the guys, he and his friend, to pretend that they love her. Just, and then dump her just to play with her and see what happens. How did you feel about playing a character like that?
Well, can I be? I'll be a little bit multi-personality here.
Okay.
As an actor in New York with no film work, trying to get a job, and I'm not. This is not me being a victim, or this is not me saying I had to do it because I wanted to do it. As an actor, given those words, I couldn't have had a bigger blessing. I mean, to just say the words on film and to rehearse those words. It was a dream. Now, the film's plot is a little bit more hard to swallow. I went to school with Neil, at college with Neil, and I had done several of his plays, so it was not shocking when I read this. I, in fact, did the play In the Company of Men in college, in which I played the Howard part. So in the movie, I played Chad. In the play, I played Howard.
So in the movie, you played the guy who initiates the scheme.
Exactly.
In the play, you played the guy who's his kind of friend who goes along with it and gets
right. His coworker.
Yes. he gets what's the right word to you? The nice polite word to use here, but he gets
suckered.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you were going to say.
Right.
So it wasn't new to me. I was out of work. I was happy to do it. Nobody thought that this film was going to see the light of day. We made it for $25,000. It just didn't have a chance. I had a lot of fun making it. And Matt Malloy, who played Howard in the film, and I just would, for days and days and days, just sit there and say the words to each other, which was a blast for an actor. I mean, it's so beautiful because Neil writes so beautifully. He really has a pentameter. He every word is chosen. I mean, he really agonizes over his words. And for an actor, again, that's great because they mean something. They're not arbitrary. When words and scripts start getting arbitrary, then you lose respect for the material that you're doing. Well, that's why Neil's so special. The subject matter, you know, you just have to decide whether or not you're willing to do it. And because it is drama, because drama is about conflict and tension, and we felt like it was worthwhile, I feel pretty good about it.
You met the playwright Neil LaBute when you were both attending Brigham Young University. Actually, I think he was teaching there.
He was a PhD student, so he had teaching responsibilities, and I was getting my undergrad.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I think, that one of the most misanthropic plays in recent memory was created at a university that's predominantly Mormon. It strikes me as paradoxical.
Well, yeah, again, it's those little ironies. and I'm sure BYU's got to be 97% Mormon. I mean,
it's
Neil and I...
Brigham Young University, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Neil and I grew up... I grew up in the... I think he converted or... His parents did, and my parents converted, so I grew up Mormon. And it's one of those things. When we would do plays there, you know, they would lock the theater. So they would take away the light board, and we'd be scheduled to have a run, you know, at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock for a week. And Neil would call me up literally after rehearsing for 3 months and be like, "We can't do it. We have to do it at 8 o'clock in the morning and tell all your friends." So we would kind of do this commando one-time theater performance, which was fun. I don't know why. It's not that we have a venomous hatred for the school or anything. I had a great time there, and I really, you know, hold my upbringing. I mean, I cherish it. You know, I have nothing bad to say. It's just that I think Neil and I somehow have a little bit of a more a darker outlook or a little bit more twisted psychology.
So they tried to lock you out of the theater so you couldn't perform or rehearse?
Yeah, perform, yeah. I think that the faculty got wind of it. See, the thing about Brigham Young was that and Neil was getting his theater PhD, and I was getting a film and theater undergrad degree, BFA. They didn't like what Neil was writing, but they couldn't deny that it was great, you know. And so they kind of had, they were ambivalent about it because, you know, when you're a, I don't like to use the word artist, but if you're a creative person and you cherish words and literature and plays and stuff like that, and then you read something that maybe, you know, isn't quite your cup of tea, but you have to recognize that it's really, really good and the guy that wrote it is really, really talented, you might want to foster that talent. So some of the faculty, they were divided because, you know, and at one point they say, well, we can't put this up as a representation of, you know, who we are as a theater major. But on the other hand, this guy's talented and we really want to show his work. So they would talk to Neil about it and ask him maybe to write other things. But he didn't really have any interest in that. And I, you know, didn't do Harvey, so I did Neil's work. You know, I think our play was going on at the same time as Harvey.
About the giant rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you chose the one that was more temperamental. Yeah, temperamentally suited to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I read you took a film ethics class from Neil LaBute. What are film ethics?
Well, and that's probably what you say. UCLA probably doesn't have that. you know, because of the subject matter, because of, you know, films are often rated R, and some of the best films are rated R, especially when you're going to film school and you can't see The Godfather or they won't show it.
They wouldn't show it on campus?
No, not in film school, you know. But you'd mostly concentrate it on the older films or whatever. I mean,
no, would they not show it at Brigham Young because of language and violence or?
Yeah, I think so. Subject matter, or if it had something had nudity. I mean, I think they cut films. Mm-hmm. You know, and a film has to agree to be cut to go there to show on campus. Mm-hmm.
So you were talking about film ethics class.
Oh, film ethics. That's right. Yeah. Neil taught that, and I'm sure it's the only class of its kind around, but Neil created quite a stir because he would read his material in class. Oh, my gosh. And literally, people would just be like, their mouths would be open. I can just see it right now. And Neil would just not give anything to him. And it was like he was manipulating us. He's playing a game with us. He would just put it out there. People would go crazy. I would just sort of sit back and laugh because I knew what was going on. But, you know, people get really upset. I mean, think about it. It's not so different than saying, is it morally right or wrong to show cigarette smoking in movies? Brigham Young, or film ethics, basically was saying, is it wrong to – do we have a responsibility to – be optimistic or hopeful or to show, you know, certain characteristics in film. It's basically the same thing because on movie sets today, you're saying, well, look, we have a responsibility not to show smoking because kids are going to think it's cool and they're going to start smoking. So it's, again, it's pretty prevalent out there, this whole kind of ethics in film. It's just that this was a class.
Are you still a Mormon?
I always, you know, it's once is, always is. I have my relationship with it and do my things. I haven't, let's put it this way, Neil and I haven't been asked back to the school to speak. I think, you know, except for, I think Napoleon Dynamite, I think that we're probably the most well-known filmmakers that have come out of school, BYU, and yet we have not been asked back.
You didn't grow up in Salt Lake, right?
No, I grew up in Northern California, and then I moved abroad.
So you grew up in communities where Mormons were not the majority population are at Brigham Young. So that must have been a big change for you and probably also made you think about the whole faith differently?
Well, I certainly had a different relationship with it than people who grew up in Salt Lake. I mean, to me, it just didn't – it was different because none of my friends were Mormon. The whole community didn't revolve around that. Just didn't – I had no concept of that. When I moved to Salt Lake, it's definitely – to go to school, it – but I did my high school in England, and if you're talking about shrinking – communities of Mormons, there's not a whole lot. There are some there. And then I traveled to Australia. I lived there. But they're good people, and they have really, very strong communities and family values, which I do cherish and have helped me out greatly as I grow older.
Mm-hmm. In your movies, you are always playing or almost always playing really attractive men. And I'm wondering what your self-image was physically when you were growing up.
I was pretty athletic. In fact, very. I love sports. I always felt like I was, I never had issues of not being accepted. I was very shy when I was growing up. And so if I had any, if I had any problems, it would be through shyness. It's like I would go over people's houses and I couldn't speak, you know. I really couldn't even ask for a drink. Just very, very shy. You know, I thought I was a reasonably cool kid, you know. My mother's mother is a poet and she was a school teacher and a writer. My mother is a writer and a poet. And, I feel like I got it from them. Drama just seemed like a natural progression for me. So it wasn't like I was Owen Meany, you know, from John Irving's novels. I wasn't kind of this kid locked up in the house. I was out there doing stuff. I had a very full life. I had, you know, my little girlfriends, and I had my little rock bands and, you know, doing all that sort of stuff. I think when I moved to England when I was 13, that really for me started – because it was very scary for me to move to England with my family. I came home from camp one day and my dad called a family meeting and he said, we're moving to England. And, I was just going into junior high. I was just getting into girls and all this and surfing, and it just blew us away. It just – my middle brother and I moved to England for 4 years. And I think it was there that I kind of got really introverted and I kind of got in touch with my creative side and my imagination, because I really had to fend for myself for a long time. And that's when I got interested in drama.
When you said that you went through a period where you were too shy to ask for a drink if you were in somebody's home, like how difficult was it for you to speak? How untalkative were you?
Well, for example... you know, we would visit my aunt, and my aunt at the time, this is how old I am, but my aunt loved Tab. So she had a refrigerator full of Tab, and I just couldn't ask for one. I'd have to whisper in my mom's ear. I'd say, can I have another Tab, or can I go to the bathroom? I mean, this is my aunt's house. And, I look back on it now, I just go, I make a point of it if I'm in somebody's house just to go open up the refrigerator, just because I just don't want that to happen to me again, you know. I make myself at home. But I didn't like it as a kid. It was very difficult because I was very – I could never really relax and settle down. And I always felt like I was imposing on whoever's house I was at, and I didn't like that at all.
Do you have children?
None. I just had a birthday yesterday too.
How old?
38. 38, so I got to get kicking.
You want to have children?
Some kids.
Got to hurry up.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to actually bear them, but
I knew that.
So yeah, no, but I feel like I don't want to be too old before I have children.
Right. The only reason why I asked is I was wondering, having gone to college and not being able to see certain movies, and then having made exactly the kind of movie you wouldn't be able to see, what kind of rules you were going to set for your own children about what they could see and not.
That's an interesting question. I think about that a lot. I think that I will be more lenient, I will say. I think that I will instill values, but I think that I'll give a little bit more background as why I believe in these values and allow for a little bit more experimentation. I'll certainly be more involved with the experience of whatever my child's going through.
Well, Aaron Eckhart, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Aaron Eckhart is starring in the new film, Thank You for Smoking.